නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ සම්මා වායාමෝ ආනන්ද භාවිතෝ බහුලීකතෝ රාග විනය පරියෝසානෝ හෝති දෝෂ විනය පරියෝසානෝ හෝති මෝහ විනය පරියෝසානෝ හෝති ඉති. Dear venerable brother, Dhamma friends, so basically we were discussing Brahmana Sutta, and it is also called Janussoni Brahmana Sutta. So this is actually based on a particular incident happened during the Buddha's time, where Venerable Ananda was on alms round, and during that time he saw a Brahmin called Janussoni traveling through the city of Savatthi with a completely white color chariot. So that canopy of the chariot is white color, and all the other accessories are white color, and even the horses used in the chariot also white color. And then Janussoni Brahmin himself and whoever else are also wearing white color clothing. So therefore everybody was amazed to see this particular scene, and they were quite happy and they were quite impressed, and therefore they were telling that this vehicle is like a divine vehicle. So Venerable Ananda also noticed this incident, and after returning from the alms round he came back to Jetavanaramaya, and he informed the Buddha what he has seen, and accordingly he made a request whether is it possible to give a analogy between this kind of a divine vehicle and the Dhamma Vinaya. Is it possible to give some sort of an analogy between this kind of a divine vehicle with some sort of a teaching available in the Buddha's whole dispensation? Then Buddha mentioned, yes, it is possible, and it is nothing but the Noble Eightfold Path. Noble Eightfold Path can be considered as a divine vehicle, as a Dhamma vehicle, as a Brahma vehicle, and it is the unsurpassed vehicle which is used in the battlefield of the defilements. So one is having kind of a war between various defilements, and in that situation Noble Eightfold Path appear like the unsurpassed vehicle. So therefore we are now discussing this Brahmana Sutta, and already we have discussed several factors, mainly the first restraint that is called Paññā Sikkhā. It consists of two factors, Sammādiṭṭhi, right view, Sammā Saṅkhappa, right intention, we have discussed. And then we already discussed the morality aspect, that is the morality Sikkhā, or the training on the morality, Sīla Sikkhā. And there we have discussed Sammā Vācā, right speech, Sammā Kammanta, right action, and then Sammā Ājīva, right livelihood. So we have discussed these parts last time. Today I am going to get on to the next training part, that is the Samādhi Sikkhā, or concentration restraint. So there are three components, three path factors, namely right effort, Sammā Vāyāma, right mindfulness, that is Sammā Sati, and right concentration, that is Sammā Samādhi. So let's start with Sammā Vāyāma. So Sammā Vāyāma, actually Buddha mentioned in this Janussoni Brahmana Sutta, if one develops Sammā Vāyāma, correct effort, right effort, so he would be able to eradicate lust, he would be able to eradicate hatred, and he also will be able to eradicate delusion. Now basically this is kind of a promise that Buddha is giving, or some sort of an assurance that Buddha is giving. If one is able to develop correct effort, so he may be able to eradicate all these unwholesome roots. Now if we come to some detail of this topic, Sammā Vāyāma, in certain other suttas, say for example in Saccha Vibhanga Sutta available in Majjhima Nikaya, so Venerable Sāriputta explained what is Sammā Vāyāma. Kathamo chauso Sammā Vāyāmo. So he explained Sammā Vāyāma, right effort, and he is mentioning that it is fourfold. In briefly, we can say the first category is called an effort to avoid arising of unarisen defilements. In simple terms, it is talking about the unwholesome defilements which are not yet arisen. So one has to have an effort not to allow them to arise. So this is the one category, first category. The second category is called if any defilement has already arisen. So one is trying to keep it away, one is trying to get rid of it, or one is trying to remove it. So that is the second type, second category of the Sammavayama. Then we are coming to the third category and fourth category, that is actually related to the wholesome states. So related to the wholesome states, the third category is assuring that if you are trying to develop some sort of wholesome state, currently it is not available, it hasn't arisen, so you are now making an effort to arise that wholesome state. So that is called the third type of Sammavayama. Then the fourth type of Sammavayama is to sustain whatever the arisen, developed wholesome states one has to sustain, maintain, make it abundant, and make it complete or take it to the fulfillment. So that is the fourth category. Now we have to discuss these four types of right effort in detail. The first category and the second category, as I mentioned, talking about the unwholesome states. The first one there is kind of an effort which is not allowing to arise unarisen unwholesome states. Now, how unwholesome states arise? So this is something that we need to discuss. So how unwholesome states are going to arise when your mind is free, when your mind is suppose in a neutral, some sort of a pure state, how it get contaminated or how it get polluted, how it get defiled. So this is something that we have to discuss. Here Buddha mentioned, now we all are using several sense doors: eye door, ear door, nose, tongue, body, and the mind. So likewise, we are using six types of sense doors, and using which we are taking various kinds of objects, we can say. Sights with the eye, sounds with the ear, smells with the nose, then the taste from the tongue, and various tactile sensations from the body, and various mental objects through the mind. So they have their corresponding object. Now constantly we are in this transaction. Constantly we are using our eyes, ears, nose, tongue, etc. So till we go to sleep, so we are constantly using these faculties. Now when we are using these faculties, if we are not mindful, if we are not restraining, then it causes to arise unarisen defilements. So this is where the restrainment of faculties are coming to the picture. Now assume that you are able to maintain some sort of a pure mind, undefiled mind, but if you are not restraining your eye faculty, whenever you are using it too much, whenever you are not mindful about how you are using eye faculty, you may even look at something vicious, something not good, something harmful, something completely detrimental to your practice, because you are not restraining it. So there are many, assume that you are watching the TV and there are various movies are there, various pictures are there. Now if you are not restraining your eye faculty, you might have an idea to look at those things. So you may even look at them. So what ultimately happen is through the eyes you are going to pollute your mind. You are going to, in a way, harm your mind. The mind already had some sort of an undefiled state, but now you are careless and you are sort of subjected to various kinds of desires. So ultimately what happens? So you are losing that purity and you are basically defiling your mind through the eyes. Similarly, there are various kinds of sounds, and that sometimes provocate the people, and sometimes they cause to arouse some sort of a hatred, aversion, and even lust. So various kinds of defilements are possible to arise when you are unmindfully using the ear faculty. Similarly, if you are not mindful of how you are using the nose, so that is also a cause of making the mind defiled. And if you don't moderate in eating, so that has various other effects. And again, if you are not sort of mindful while eating, so it can cause to arise various defilements like conceit, maybe greed, etc. And similarly, if you are not restraining the body when you are using the body faculty, so that also cause to arise various kinds of defilements. On top of that, we have the mind. So there are various kinds of thoughts coming to the mind, various mental images coming to the mind. And if we are not mindful about it, if we are not restraining the mind, if we are simply allowing the mind to drive us, then ultimately we end up with kind of a burning lust or burning anger or completely deluded state. So that is the ultimate result. So therefore Buddha mentioned this section as Sangvara Pradhana, where one has to maintain some kind of a restraint. So literally it is mentioned Anuppannanang Papakanang Akusalanang Dhammanang Anuppadaya. There are unarisen defilements, and now you are making an effort not to arise them, not to allowing them to come up. For that, now you are going to have a seal. Chandang janeti, vayamati, viriyang arabhati, chittam pagganhati padhati. So Buddha explains very beautifully there. So some sort of a gradual effort that one has to make. Chandang janeti. So you have to have some sort of a seal, some sort of a desire to not to have these defilements. So if there is no such requirement, if there is no such inner yearning coming from yourself, if there is no some sort of a proper desire coming from your side to avoid these defilements arising, then you simply become kind of careless, ignorant, and you are not making any effort. But in order to make an effort, you need to have that desire. So sometimes we call it as kusalachanda. It's a kind of a desire putting in the wholesome side. Now you need to protect the mind, so that you are having this kind of a desire. I want to protect the mind. So that is the kind of an urge, that is the kind of the proper desire, that is the kind of a seal that you are going to have. And vayamati, now when you have such a determination, now you are making an effort. Viriyang arabati, now you start an effort, you are putting energy. Chittam pagganhati, and you are exerts the mind. And padahati, and you are striving for that. So here, so we can understand, now when it comes to effort, so there are three stages sometimes explained in the Dhamma. The first stage is the inceptive energy. It's talking about the arambadhatu. So in order to do whatever the thing, so you need to initiate it. You have to launch it. So in order to launch something, so you need this inceptive energy at the very beginning. Now, sometimes it is very difficult to arouse this energy. So we are keep on postponing without really implementing things. We constantly postpone because we don't have this inceptive energy. Now, arambadhatu therefore is important for one to arouse the energy, for one to start something wholesome. Then that is alone is not enough, that you need to maintain that. You have to go through it now. So once something has started, there are various obstacles coming on your way. Now how to overcome them and how to continue the path, how to reach the destination. Now in order to do that, you need some sort of a perseverance. So this is called Nikkama Dhatu. So this is another type of effort that Buddha is discussing, that one has to have this perseverance in order to continue the wholesome activity that you have started. And even when you are coming through various difficulties, many obstacles, still you are not giving up. You are some sort of having invincibility in your effort. So this is called Parakrama Dhatu. So when the path is smooth, no harm, you can continue. When there are certain obstacles, you can still overcome them and continue. If there are sort of major difficulties, still you are not giving it up. You are having this invincible type of effort that you are ready to go through it, to face that problem, to overcome that issue and to continue your path. So therefore Buddha mentioned about three types of effort. First one is the inceptive energy, second one is the kind of perseverance, and the other one is the invincible energy. Now, if one is having this sort of energy, this sort of an effort, then one is able to maintain defilement-free mind, undefiled mind. Because you are quite careful about your mind and you appreciate the clarity of the mind, you appreciate the simplicity of the mind, you appreciate the non-grasping nature of the mind, undefiled state of the mind, and you want to maintain it, you want to protect it. So in order to do that, you are restraining your faculties. So therefore it is called Sangvarappadhana. Now, so if one is maintaining that kind of effort, Buddha mentioned the defilements, particularly the hindrances, do not take a chance. Because we are continuously on guard, and therefore we are not allowing those defilements to come to something developed level, not allowing them to increase. At the very early stages, at various inception, we are able to recognize. But unfortunately, we don't have that skill at the very beginning. So sometimes we are not mindful. Sometimes we are ignorant. We are sometimes careless. Due to that, what happens? Various defilements come into the surface. They start to grow. But at any given time, probably you may be aware, okay, now the mind is subjected to some sort of a defilement. Now the mind is lustful. Now the mind is burning with anger. There are certain instances that we become mindful and aware that the mind is not free from defilements, rather it is burning with some sort of a defilement. So this recognition is also very important. So otherwise what happens? We simply become victimized to this different types of defilements, and ultimately we do some sort of a transgression. And we are breaking the precept and we are harming ourselves and harming another person. Now therefore, recognizing when the mind is defiled, we should recognize that honestly, humbly. Now there, after you recognize that the mind has defiled, so Buddha mentioned, now don't tolerate it. Now don't simply allow it to grow. Don't entertain it. Rather, try to abandon it. Now, this is the second category of the effort that Buddha discussed. It is called Pahanappadhana, where it is emphasizing the abandonment. So, you are geared to abandon the arisen defilements. Due to some reason, due to some mistake, due to some unmindfulness, so you have certain defilements have come to the surface. So you are, the mind started to get defiled, and now you are aware of it. So once you are aware of it, once you are able to establish mindfulness, now don't try to entertain it. Don't allow the defilement to take you for a ride. Rather, now try to tackle it. Try to handle it. So therefore Buddha mentioned, Uppannanang papakanang akusalanang dhammanang pahanaya. Chandang janeti vayamati viriyang arabhati. Chittam pagganhati padahati. So whenever you recognize that some sort of a defilement has arisen in the mind, now you are making an effort, now you are making a wholesome desire to remove it. As a result, now you start an effort. As a result, you sort of use various techniques to remove it. and you are exerting the mind and you are making a determination and you are striving to remove that defilement. Now there are various kinds of techniques we can discuss under this category. Say for example, you are new to the practice and therefore assume that you don't have fairly developed mindfulness and not enough clear comprehension. So therefore, time to time your mind get defiled and you are subject to burning lust, burning anger, and sometimes keep on proliferation. So keep on proliferating. So this kind of situation is there sometimes, and how to handle it then? So this is something that we can understand using various other techniques that actually we can handle this situation. Say for example, if you are somewhat familiar with the Asubha Bhavana, where you are practicing the unattractiveness of the body, then that can be a way of removing the arisen lust. Because sometimes simply by being aware of the arisen lust, it may not disappear. Because it is so powerful and you are also sometimes entertaining it, as a result it is growing. Now you have to use some other technique to save the mind. So Asubha Bhavana, the unattractiveness or the loathsomeness of the body, is some sort of a method which is allowing us to come back to the reality. So we understand that this body consists of various body parts. None of them are attractive. So therefore, you can use this loathsomeness or unattractiveness of the body to remove that arisen lust. On the other hand, if your mind is burning with anger, simply being mindful if it is not going away, fading out, then you can use maybe loving-kindness meditation or Buddhanusati, reflections of the Buddha. So these kinds of meditations are useful in order to remove the arisen anger. Say you are not sort of effortful, you are simply postponing things and lethargic, lazy. So if this kind of a situation is there in the mind, probably the reflections on the death may really helpful, so that you may be able to arouse urgency. So likewise, there are many different types of solutions, tools, which we can use in order to handle various kinds of defilements. On the other hand, as you are continuing your practice, if you are able to develop fair amount of mindfulness, fair amount of clear comprehension, then actually just by being aware of any kind of arisen defilement, they start to weaken. Because your mindfulness is so strong and you are able to clearly recognize the arisen defilement, and it is also happen at the very early stages. It hasn't grown to a very higher stage, rather you are able to quickly recognize the arising of a particular defilement. So as you are being aware of it, so you are being fully face to face with it, fully mindful about it. As a result of that, you are not promoting it, you are not feeding it. Now what happens, it starts to fade away, starts to weaken. Now this is the, in we can say that the sort of an advanced technique where one can use when you have fair amount of developed mindfulness and fair amount of developed clear comprehension. Now if we don't have the desire to remove the arisen defilement, suppose there is lust arisen in the mind and you are sort of feeling little happy about it and you feel to enjoy it, entertain it, then you start to feed it, then you are further and further start to burn from it. So therefore we should have that the very early desire to remove the defilement. So that inclination, that setting up of the mind, that determination has to arouse at the very early stage. Without it, all the respective other actions won't happen. And on the other hand, we can't make a kind of an assurance that the defilements may not arise because now I am practicing diligently and say I am an expert practitioner and I am practicing for several years now. So therefore I am quite sure no defilements going to arise. So there is no such a guarantee that we can make. there are of course situations that the possibility of arising defilements. Therefore, keeping on guard of our mind is quite important. So, just for example, till one becomes a non-returner, so you can't make sure that lust is not going to arise in your mind. Till one becomes a non-returner, you can't make sure that the anger is not going to arise in your mind. So therefore, keeping that kind of a down-to-earth attitude is quite important. Because sometimes people simply take in for granted, thinking that now anger is not going to arise, now lust is not going to arise. We can't make such kind of an assurance till we are able to completely uproot certain latent tendencies. Till we have latent tendencies or influxes, so they are we are prone to arise various kind of defilements. So that risk is always there. So that is why we have to carefully maintain our practice. Daily practice is important, and constant guard of the mind is important. And when some defilement is arising, we have to humbly recognize that is also important. And then when we are maintaining such a kind of a diligent mind, then probably we may be able to slowly eradicate the arising defilements. Now we can come to the third category. Now third and the fourth are actually related to the wholesome states. Now Buddha talks not only about the unwholesome states, removing and not allowing unwholesome states to arise. Rather, he talks about the wholesome states as well. Now when it comes to the wholesome states, we have to arouse them. So these wholesome states we may have to some extent, but it is not yet developed. Say for example, we all may have some amount of mindfulness, but it is not enough to overcome various defilements, or it is not enough to go through a fairly stable mind state. So in order to have such kind of a stability of the mind, purity of the mind, so we have to develop mindfulness from where we have it, from where the state it is. So even if we start developing it, it's sometimes quite difficult, because it is not easy to develop these wholesome states, because they are quite slippery in a way, quite quickly disappear. Now the unwholesome states is opposite. Even if we don't do anything, they quickly arise. So that is the nature of the mind. Now if we have to develop certain wholesome state, so we have to make a very good effort. We have to have a very good determination, otherwise we are not going to do it. So therefore Buddha mentioned, anuppannanam kusalanam dhammanam uppadaya. There are certain good qualities not yet available in the mind. Now you are making an effort to arouse them. Chandan janeti vayamati viriyang arabati chittam pagganhati padahati. And you are making a desire, you are sort of having some sort of a seal to arouse them. And then you are starting an effort, and then you make a determination, you are quite determined to do it, and you are striving to implement it. Now this way that we can slowly develop certain good qualities. So therefore this development of good qualities is called bhavana. So therefore this section is called bhavana padhana. So you are having sort of an effort to develop certain good qualities which is necessary in this spiritual life. Now this is the cultivation in the other sense. So now you got to cultivate certain good qualities in your mind. Now, when it comes to good qualities, now here, bhavana, meditation, so this is the other subject that we are discussing, and there are many attributes of it, and we are able to develop mindfulness, concentration, wisdom, using many techniques, and say using the body you can develop mindfulness and concentration, wisdom. You can, using the feelings, you can do it by recognizing various mental states. You can do it, and by recognizing various phenomena, also we can do it. And even certain samatha practices, tranquility practices are also there in order to develop to some extent the concentration. So likewise, there are many techniques that we have to discuss when it comes to development of the mind. Now, at the very beginning, so we don't have enough capacity to develop mindfulness to higher state. So we have to start from the ground level sometimes, because mind is used to some sort of a careless state, and constant it is getting distracted. As a result of that, so we have to strive at the very beginning. It is really depends on the some sort of a striving, some sort of a effort at the very beginning. So you should have a lot of effort to overcome that initial inertia, we can say. Now, if you are able to break that inertia, then the path may be somewhat easy, we can say. Now, assume that you are now able to break that inertia and you are putting the inceptive energy, inceptive effort, and you are now continuing your practice. And you are able to establish mindfulness to some extent. Say, for example, you are developing the mindfulness on breathing, and now for about 20 breaths you can continuously observe, less distractions, and you are able to observe 20 breaths, in breaths and out breaths. Now you got to further improve it. Now you are making it 25, now you are making it 30, 40, 50, 60. So likewise, now you are slowly improving it. Now you are becoming confident. Now you can maintain mindfulness to some extent. Sato asasati, sato pasasati. So we start from the very simple stage, but you are improving mindfulness and now able to reach continuous mindfulness to some extent. About 100 breaths, you can maintain mindfulness continuously. Now, at this stage, we can say the yogi, the practitioner, is gaining some sort of confidence. Okay, he has learned some techniques how to handle the mind in order to maintain continuous mindfulness. So this is the point we are beginning to experience sati sambojjhanga, what you call as the enlightenment factor of the mindfulness. Till we have some sort of distractions and the mind is jumping to past, future, etc., then we can't say that we are developing mindfulness enlightenment factor. Rather, when the mind is well established on a particular selected phenomena for a considerable period of time, there we can say, okay, now the sati sambojjhanga, mindfulness enlightenment factor, is going to develop. Now, once we are well established, our mind is well established, then Buddha asks us to investigate the phenomena. Now we have to carefully examine the phenomena. It is not that through the book or that you are listening to Dhamma and examine, rather now you are being mindful onto some phenomena, and that particular phenomena you have to carefully examine, carefully investigate, while keeping the mind very quiet, but with some curiosity. So you are a little curious to learn from it. Now this is the way that we are developing the investigation enlightenment factor, Dhamma Vichaya. Now as you are continuing this practice, you need fair amount of effort. As we are discussing today, Samma Vayama is in effect, because this practice is not easy. It is not like watching of a movie. There you don't need any energy, because the attractive nature of that movie is making you absorb to it. But here you have to purposely make an effort in order to investigate whatever the phenomena going to arise. So you are able to maintain mindfulness for a long time, and then you are not simply satisfied with it, rather you are now trying to investigate what is really happening on this particular phenomena. How it is behaving, how is it arising, how it is changing, how is it passing away, and is it a single phenomena or a bunch of phenomena? So likewise, in many different aspects, that way that you have to investigate. And in order to do that, you need a lot of effort. So this effort is called the Virya Sambojjhanga, the enlightenment factor of effort or energy. Now assume things are happening smoothly and mind is less distracted, and now you are able to maintain mindfulness for a considerable period of time, and again the phenomena also become sort of lucid, evident, and your various aspects are able to recognize, and things are happening properly. Now some sort of contentment is arising in the mind, because your effort was successful and now you are not suffering with various defilements, and mind is quite satisfied. So the contentment and the rapture are going to arise. Now this is the beginning of Piti Sambojjhanga, the enlightenment factor of the rapture. Now as we are continuing like this, now the practice becomes fairly smooth and the mind itself is catching up its energy, and we don't need to sort of put our hand, we don't need to strive in as previous, and now the mind is taking care of the whole practice, and this is where we feel quite comfortable, we feel fairly satisfied, and we feel quite lighter, because it is not that effortful, rather the situation is under control. Here we can say the mind is quite tranquil. This is the beginning of the tranquility enlightenment factor or the Passaddhi Sambojjhanga. Now then Buddha mentioned, when the mind is tranquilized and things are happening properly, that indicates the mind is well concentrated. It is not jumping here and there. There is a selected phenomena and onto which mind is well focused. Therefore the mind is well concentrated. It is therefore the concentration enlightenment factor or Samadhi Sambojjhanga is going to develop. Now there's an interesting situation happens here. Now if everything happens really well, you have nothing to do. You simply have to continue, that's all. So now you have to be equanimous. Without interrupting the process. Without interrupting the process, now you are simply allowing the process to happen and taking care of it continuously. And here you have to be simply maintain equanimity. That is how the equanimity enlightenment factor or Upekkha Sambojjhanga is going to develop. Now this is how in certain suttas like Anapanasati Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya, that Buddha explains the early development of the enlightenment factors. Now as you are developing like this, suppose you are able to come to a level that mind is not grasping anything, not holding anything, not associating with anything, mind is sometimes empty and quite spacious, quite relaxed, no eye making, mind making. So if such kind of a non-grasping state is possible, now you have to maintain that state. So there also you are continuing to develop enlightenment factors, but in a different manner. Not like before. Previously we have to strive in a way to develop the enlightenment factors. But now things are smooth and things are happening, and you have to allow things to happen. You should not interrupt the process, you should not exert too much effort. Now you have to change the practice pattern into a different manner. So therefore Buddha mentioned at this level how to develop enlightenment factors in different way. Sati sambojjhangam bhaveti viveka nisitam, viraga nisitam, nirodha nisitam, ossagga parinami. Dhamma vichaya sambojjhangam bhaveti viveka nisitam, viraga nisitam, nirodha nisitam, ossagga parinami. So likewise Buddha explained that one has to develop various enlightenment factors, giving some prominence to relaxation, giving some prominence to fading away, giving some prominence to dispassion, and culmination in the letting go, relinquishment. So basically it is not now you are sort of purposely doing something, rather you are allowing things to happen and maintaining very relaxed attitude in the mind, and whatever happens from the outside, you are being dispassionate towards them and let them fade away, and you are maintaining the mind in stillness, not sort of a functioning state or kind of an disturbed or agitated state, rather maintaining it in a kind of a tranquil, still state. And every time, whenever things are happening, you have an attitude now being developed to relinquish it, not to hold it, not to grasp it. So therefore, this is how Buddha explained the cultivation or the bhavana pradhana. Now we come to the last stage, so that is called anurakkhana pradhana, or the guarding of the mind, or the guarding of the good qualities, wholesome qualities that you have already developed. You may have already developed certain amount of mindfulness, you already have developed certain amount of concentration, already have developed wisdom, and now you have to protect it. If you are not continuing your practice, they start to fade away. If you are ignoring your practice, they may start to fade away. So you have to sort of protect the mind in order to protect these already developed good qualities. And you should not satisfy at that level, you have to continue in order to make them fulfill, in order to take it to their culmination or to their completeness. Therefore Buddha mentioned, Uppannanam kusalanam dhammanam titiya asammosaya bhiyo bhavaya vepullaya bhavanaya paripurya chandan janeti vayamati viryang arabati chittam pagganhati padahati. Now what it says is that Uppannanam kusalanam dhammanam titiya. So certain good qualities are already arisen in the mind. Now you are trying to make an effort to continue it, not allowing it to fade away, not allowing it to disappear, and to strengthen it further and to increase it further, to take it to the fulfillment. And in order to do that, now you are making a desire, now you are taking a kind of a determination, I should further develop, I should complete the practice. And in order to do that, you are making an effort, you are starting an effort, and you do it with a determination, and whatever the obstacles are coming on your way, you are able to overcome them. So you are striving to do that. Now this is called the fourth category of the effort, that is called anurakkhana pradhana, where you are trying to maintain and develop the already arisen good qualities. Now, so these are the four types of effort that Buddha talks in this Samma Vayama, and you can understand, so this is in a way kind of an ongoing effort, and there are many different levels that we have to maintain, and we should be skillful to properly balance the effort. Say for example, in your practice, at the beginning probably you may have a lot of effort because the defilements are so powerful, hindrances are so powerful, so you have to effortfully overcome them. But during the session, suppose at the beginning of your sitting session, so the defilements are powerful, so you are making a strong effort. But while you are reaching the middle, now to some extent mind has tamed, mindfulness has improved, concentration has improved. And at that time, you have to balance the effort. You cannot maintain that strong effort at this stage. Then it becomes an hindrance. Then you have to little reduce the effort and balance the effort, allowing the space for concentration to develop. If you are exerting too much effort, then the concentration does not develop. Rather, it can even lead to restlessness in the mind, agitation in the mind. Now you are balancing the effort and allowing the mind to calm down, and therefore the concentration tranquility take charge. Now the concentration and tranquility also going to arise. Now as when things are happening smoothly, you have to simply maintain it, simply sustain it, and therefore you are doing some sort of a balancing of effort. So therefore Buddha mentioned about this virya samatha, balancing of effort. So it is a completely practical approach that you can simply listen from Dhamma and you can read a book, but you yourself have to learn through your own practice. Like you are learning how to balance what you call the pedal while driving in that old vehicles where you have manual gears, where you have to do some sort of a clutch balancing. Similarly, here also, as you are developing the practice, you have to gain this skill how to balance the effort. So I think that is enough for today's section, and with that I like to conclude Samma Vayama, the right effort, and now I open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. For any new participants joining us for the first time, you may ask questions. Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. For any new participants joining us for the first time, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you may send them anonymously via the chat. Bhante, I don't yet have any questions. Maybe you can give folks a minute.
Yeah, so... good, it seems that everybody are sort of complete in their practice, so no questions. And how about our Dhammo Basa? Do you have any question?
Unrelated question.
Eh?
I will ask after.
After, right. So Venerable Dhammo Basa also joining with me. Okay, now there's a question. As usual, Chitra Devi has a question. You can take the chance.
Okay, you may unmute, please.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Now, basically, Bhante, I have a deep question, but I couldn't find that sutta that you said was from the Majjhima Nikaya, the Satcha Vibhanga Sutta. What is the number, if you have that number with you, Bhante?
Satcha Vibhanga Sutta. I'll let you know. Yeah.
Okay, and...
yeah.
The other thing was, you didn't touch on delusion, but I am assuming that you will do that the next time. You spoke about lust and hatred, how to overcome these things by loving kindness meditation when it comes to anger, and in the case of lust, to do the Pitikul Bhavana. But you didn't touch on delusion, so are you going to touch on that, or I presume you are going to, Bhante?
Actually, the delusion handling is a kind of a long process. So that is where the complete vipassana bhavana is doing. So it is not a single task. Like suppose when the anger is arising in the mind, suppose you do some sort of loving kindness meditation and you are able to temporarily remove it, so that we all understand. But the delusion... in that sense, suppose there are when delusion is there, so recognizing this as delusion also happens in different stages. So that is what we actually discuss in Sammaditti. So Sammaditti, so at the beginning we need to understand what is Micchaditti. So Micchaditti is some sort of a delusion. So understanding what is Micchaditti, there we need to understand, okay, this is wrong, this is correct. So that is Sammaditti, that is a freedom from delusion to some extent. And say for example, killing animals, stealing, sexual misconduct and all these different things. So we understand these are not wholesome. So that is an understanding, that is a freedom from delusion. So that may be a kind of fundamental level. And now you are understanding what is Sammaditti. So, say giving is good, and helping another is good, doing something, say, say beneficial to someone is good, doing something beneficial to yourself is good, and not killing animals is good, not stealing is good. So likewise, now we are recognizing the good wholesome activities. So this is also samadhi, removing the defilements, also the delusion. Now we are further growing. Now we are becoming a good person, and we are becoming generous, and likewise, now we are developing a fair amount of wholesome stage, and that is, in a way, we are developing wisdom. And now, suppose we are getting to meditation. Now we are developing wholesome state, say mindfulness, concentration, and using that concentration, now you are trying to recognize or try to understand various phenomena, how they are behaving. So here, you are trying to know how things as they truly are. Now this is removing delusion. And as you are developing that wisdom, the delusion is fading away. And as it is further and further fading away, there are further insights going to arise. How impermanent they are, how unsatisfactory they are, how insubstantial they are. So likewise, this is again the development of the wisdom. So therefore, the removal of the delusion is not a kind of a straightforward task. So it is a gradual process. And as you are improving wisdom, removing delusion, actually are removing craving as well. And it's a kind of a parallel process. And as you are doing that, these other defilements like hatred and lust and all these things also start to fade away. So therefore, it's a kind of a combined process. So it is not at the very early stages, we can simply say when the mind is entangled with something and continuously thinking and thinking, doing some proliferation. So we have to save the mind or protect the mind without encouraging it. So to that extent, we can say we are overcoming delusion. So that is where we are taking our attention to very simple activity like breathing or walking or something like that. So the mind not entertain any kind of, say, rumination. So that is also a removal of delusion in temporary way. But the complete removal of delusion is the entire process of vipassana meditation.
So what I'm understanding is, Bhante, when we develop wisdom, then we are removing delusion, in the vipassana we little by little understand the concept of anicca, dukkha, anatta, and so we are losing the sense of self. Then also delusion gets less and less. Is that right? If I said that
exactly, yes. So it's a gradual process. It's a gradual process. And even now, say for example, we are simply, for simple explanation, I am telling, okay, you are using, removing lust using the loving kindness meditation. But it is temporary. You can't simply remove it just merely using loving kindness meditation. Now, lust is also the gross form of the desire, sensual desire. But there are many other subtle forms of desire. So when it comes to tanha, craving, so Buddha talks about three categories. Kama tanha, the sensual desire. Then the what you call the bhava tanha, the desire to become. And then the vibhava tanha, desire to get rid of. Now we have to slowly address all these different categories of craving. Now, loving kindness meditation does not immediately address these. And or the asubha bhavana, the what you call this unattractiveness or loathsomeness of the body, does not immediately address all these. But temporarily we can overcome the arisen lust using asubha bhavana. Temporarily we can overcome anger using loving kindness meditation. So, but there again we have to get on to a kind of a systematic approach to completely eradicate various defilements. So that involves actually the development of the wisdom.
So it is a long process, Bhante.
Yeah. That is why I mean, assume that there is a kind of a threat from a terrorist organization in the country, and they are bombing and they are sort of doing various, making a lot of issues and assume that there is a now bombing has happened in a particular situation. Now immediately you what you have to do is to take these say casualties to the hospital, and you do some various activities to sort of settle the situation, to calm down the situation. But that is not the solution. That is a temporary solution. Now you have to find out what are the exact reason why these people have become agitated, why these people become provocation. So why these people are causing all these troubles, what are the real reasons. Now you have to go deeper and deeper to the finding out the causes. Then only you are able to give lasting, kind of a solution so that everybody can live peacefully. So likewise, so the arisen anger, arisen lust is simply a kind of the, manifestation of the defilement. But there are deep-rooted latent tendencies, though they are the real cause in a way. So we have to address that. So that is where the Buddha's teaching is so powerful. Now, even the other ascetics, even the other religious leaders, actually they also found that Maitri Bhavana and say the Asubha Bhavana is helpful to overcome defilements, but they couldn't uproot the defilements. Temporarily we can maintain the mind in an undefiled, calm, tranquil state, but still the potential is there, still the risk is there underneath. So how to address those hidden layers? So that is the beauty, that is the depth of the Buddha's teaching. So that requires kind of continuous practice of vipassana.
So we don't always have to sit on the cushion, but we can also do it while we are doing our daily activities, where if we watch our mind.
Definitely.
And we can contemplate at that time, can't we?
Definitely. Actually, doing on the cushion is one stage. So because now development of the mindfulness concentration actually difficult for a beginner while engaged with various activities. So and therefore Buddha recommend that you go to a secluded place, you sit cross-legged if possible, and be away from various other disturbances, and now you try to develop mindfulness and concentration, because that is the most conducive environment, conducive situation. But once you are able to develop it to some extent, and again you are able to develop wisdom to some extent, and there now you need to further refine it. Now you have to recognize various hidden layers of the mind, hidden tendencies of the mind. Now they may not arouse simply by being on the cushion, as you said. So
yeah,
probably when you are dealing with others, probably you may get angry. You probably,
exactly.
Yeah. So while dealing with others, probably the mind get sort of lustful. So likewise, only when the possibilities are there, so those tendencies are going to become active. So therefore, it's a kind of quite a practical approach what Buddha is showing us. So at the very early stages, now it is on the other hand, I can give you a simple simile. Like you are training to go to a battle. So if you are not a trained soldier, so you can't immediately go to the battle. So you have to be in a training camp, and certain other good soldiers or good experienced people are coming and training you. But you are in a very safe environment, and there is no one to shoot you. Rather, you are sort of using other tools, mechanisms, environment, safely that you are developing that skills. But battle is not inside the training camp.
Yeah,
you have to go to the battlefield. So, but when you are going to the battlefield, you are sort of fairly a trained person. So now you are doing the battle. So there you have to find out your own ways and means. But the Buddha's teaching is giving us enough strength. Already you have hands-on experience to some extent. Now, while being at the office, when you are dealing with a particular person, suppose he is not respecting your order. Now you get angry. You get hurt. So that indicates there is a self-view available in ourselves. That indicates some sort of conceit available in our mind. So that if we can recognize at that very moment, there we can address the defilement. So there we have to be quite humble. Okay, this person is disrespecting me. True, fine. But why am I getting angry? So why am I getting so hurt? So that is the issue. Now, say for example, when Buddha and the Sangha going on arms round due to some other sort of provocation by other religious groups, so certain villagers start to blame the whole Sangha. They start to use filthy words and start to blame. So the Sangha members were quite disturbed. And they came to the Buddha and they start to complain. But they, let's leave this place, leave this city. We can't even go arms round. People are using filthy words and blaming us. Then what Buddha mentioned, it's a beautiful verse coming in Udana. Game aranye sukadukka putto neva attano no parato daheta suke puseyum passa pusanti passa upadin paticca nirupadin kena puseyum passa. Now Buddha actually used that opportunity to deliver a very beautiful, profound dhamma. What he mentioned there is, whenever you overcome that kind of a situation, either in the village or in the city, game aranye sukadukka putto, that it is not that you always can experience praise and the fame or whatever the happiness every time. The opposite also might happen. You might get blamed. You might subject to sort of a suffering. You might become sort of ill-famed. So these are the sort of worldly situations, ups and downs. Neva attano no parato daheta. Now there's a strong advice. Don't take it personally. Don't make a person there. So if you are making a person, so he is blaming me. Now here we are personifying the whole situation, personifying the whole experience. So I am making an I who is subjected to this blaming, and I am making a person, he or she, who does the blaming. So now I am completely personifying the whole situation. But Buddha asked us to apply wisdom there. Neva attano no parato dahiya. Puseya pusanti passa upadim paticca. Now, whenever we have lot of assets, whenever we have a lot of eye making and mind making, whenever we have so much of, compiled, prepared situations to make a person, say, I am so and so. My designation is this. I am this old. I am a lady. I am a man. My salary is this. All people are respecting me. So likewise, we are making so many attributes to build the ego. So when we have that ego, that is where this all the whatever the hints or all the words are coming and attacking. So when these things are not available, if the mind is completely free, not attached to anything, then where are these hints and words and blames are going to come and hit? So likewise, Buddha is giving a very interesting sermon there by making use of that incident. So therefore, it is always applying of the Dhamma is in a way practical. So we are learning, we are strengthening certain good qualities during the meditation, but always we should not sort of satisfy there itself. Rather, we have to apply what we have learned, apply what we have sort of developed in all the day-to-day activities. Then only we can say, okay, I can handle things properly without getting hurt, without being damaged. So I can actually, at least without making any defilements, I can face the situation.
So, little by little, we have to lose this me, mine, myself, isn't that right,
Pante? That's the whole anatta. Exactly, yeah. So, actually, that is not kind of a suicidal thing. rather, or even kind of you are allowing others to belittle you. rather you profoundly understand what is really going on. It has to be a kind of an experiential knowledge that you very well understood there is nothing substantial here. I mean, there is no person, being or anything here because of the ignorance I am making a self. It is a kind of a mind-made self, constructed self. So, I mean, even I am telling you now, I still can't do it 200%. So I also have to do it. I also have to practice. So it's not a kind of an easy job. But the path is that we have to honestly, humbly develop the path. Yeah.
Yes, thank you, Bhante. It's very difficult. I mean, it's against the grain and
definitely
uphill task, but that's how to go about it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. So you are welcome. And we have put the link to Saccha Vibhanga Sutta, that is Majjhima Nikaya 141.
Thank you. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Okay, Bhante, for the next question. Bhante, in the Dhamma Vichara stage, can it proceed without putting much effort?
Yeah, we can do it. Actually, not early. I mean, it is like this. Now, say for example, as you develop mindfulness, suppose you are able to develop mindfulness to some extent. Now, the mind is happy, quiet, and mindfully, you are able to walk fine. But when I ask you to carefully examine what you are experiencing, so that requires energy. So previously you are in a more relaxed manner, relaxed state, but now I am asking you to purposely examine what you are experiencing. So that requires energy. And it is not the energy that what you are using at the very early stages, that you are striving, you are keeping your body straight and you are sort of having a strong determination. No, it is not like that. But it's a kind of a very, refined effort, careful effort you have to maintain in order to examine what is really going on. So this is an effort. But as you do it, so you are gaining the skill. At the early stages, you, even though you are trying to examine, nothing is visible. So that is the interesting part. Say for example, when I am asking you to examine a particular painful feeling, now you are keeping your mind there, but nothing is there. I mean, just the painful feeling is there, not much detail. But you have to do it again and again. Now that is the perseverance, the Nikkama Dhatu. You are doing it again and again, again and again. Now as you are sort of developing that skill, then you may understand, okay, this has a not, it's a kind of a bundle of feelings. It's a kind of a group of feelings. Now that knowledge does not happen just by, with one day practice maybe. So you have to carefully do this examination for a long time. Then only you are able to refine your mindfulness, you are properly able to focus your mind, then you are able to retrieve this information. Now you understand it is not a single painful feeling, rather it's a manifestation of group of feelings. Now you are able to recognize each individual minute feeling even. Now this also requires energy. But how about the energy? I mean, there is a significant difference as well. At the very early stage, you are simply adverting your mind to observe it. So that also requires energy. But when you are carefully recognizing each minute feeling, that also requires effort, but very subtle effort. So likewise, the effort is there, but it is a kind of a in varying degree, not the same level. That's what I mentioned, that I can simply tell you, but you yourself have to practically develop it. Yeah. I don't know whether you got the answer.
Okay. If there is follow-up question, please do let me know.
Yeah.
So the next Bhante, But then can you explain the meaning of the four gathas that you recite at the end? Sorry for the ignorance, I mean Pali gathas at the end of the program every week.
So you mean the ettavataca amhehi? So is that the one, that sharing of merit? Maybe that.
Yeah, didn't specify. Oh, yes, she said yes.
Okay, so basically that means that I am able to accumulate merits using this wholesome activity. Ettavataca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang. So I am able to accumulate lot of merits by conducting this wholesome activity, and let me ettavataca amhehi sambadam punya sampadang sabbe deva anubodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Let these merits be a cause of rejoice for the all celestial beings, and may they rejoice in this good activity. And similarly, you are allowing various other beings also to enjoy this, and you are sharing the merits. Basically, sabbe deva anumodantu, sabbe bhuta anumodantu, and sabbe satta anumodantu. Sabbe deva means let the all celestial beings, sabbe bhuta means all the arisen beings, sabbe satta means all the beings. So these are different levels, different ways of sort of categorizing the beings, and in essence we can say we are sharing merits with everybody.
So Bhante, the next question, and let's see, okay. So I'm busy and I don't have as much time to practice recently, but I'm still trying to be mindful as much as possible. But I feel like I am rebuilding the self-view. Will the developments from my vipassana and the wisdom that has arisen before, will that decline over time, similar to samadhi practice?
I didn't get to your question properly, Jennifer.
So if I could paraphrase the question, Bhante?
Yeah, sure.
The yogi is asking, because he or she is not very busy right now,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't have as much time, but is still trying to maintain mindfulness as much as possible.
Yeah.
But this person can see and feel that he or she is rebuilding the self-view.
Yeah.
So the question is, will any developments and insights from the vipassana decline over time because there's not as much time to practice and life is busy?
Yeah.
Or similar to like in a samadhi practice where concentration will decline and you don't practice samadhi?
Correct. Yeah, definitely. Because that is why, I mean, we need to take it to the fulfillment. Even though you are a vipassana practitioner, it does not guarantee that if you are not practicing, that you are able to maintain that level, because the concentration is slowly deteriorating. As the concentration is deteriorating, the lustful states, the kamachanda, the sensual desire is growing, and again the wisdom is deteriorating, and then the various delusions are going to happen, and the mindfulness is also deteriorating. So you start to proliferate, and the mind starts to enjoy past and the future. So therefore, slowly the whole developed states going to sort of fade away. So that is why Buddha emphasized the third and the fourth categories of effort, that you need to have an effort to develop, arouse, not arisen wholesome states. And again, you need to have an effort to sustain, maintain, further develop, enhance what you have already developed. Because that is why the importance of the daily practice. And it is true that, I mean, nobody can maintain perfect daily practice. True, there are ups and downs. But you have to take care of it. You have to, when you have certain duties and certain responsibility to fulfill on behalf of others, so you do it. But later you need to have your own seclusion, have some time for yourself, so that you are regaining the skills that you have developed. Otherwise, things will fade away. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. I believe that was the last question.
Yeah, I saw this Mahesha is with has raised the hand.
Yes. Okay, Mahesha, sorry, almost skipped you. I'm so glad Bhante noticed you.
Yeah.
Please, you may unmute yourself.
Thank you, Jennifer, and thank you, Bhante. I actually have a question. This is related to my practice. I usually was doing like 1 hour sitting and some walking as well. Walking meditation is not the particular time, like I, whenever I feel I do it, and I pretty much enjoy it. Now, I thought I would do another 1 hour, increasing it to 2 hours for a day, and I started doing it, finding time at the end of the day. And when I start doing it, it's quite okay, and because it's maybe tired after the day's work. But I feel like I go to that empty space. I can remember that, and then
sleeping.
Like those initial stages, I go to unknown state then, and when I realize that, when I get back my mind, then I feel, oh my God, I was like nodding my head forward and staying like that. So
yeah.
This happens, but I thought, okay, doesn't matter, I'll keep going. If I stop, it will be stopped for all, so that's 7 hours, so therefore I keep doing it. But the problem occurred, I don't know whether it's because of that nodding head thing happening for like 15, 20 minutes, I think, for a day. My middle, like back of my neck, below the neck actually, that comes to near the spinal area, I got a severe kind of a pain now, not when I'm doing the meditation, but other times when I'm doing other work. So I'm not spending quite a lot of time on computer as such, but I do time to time on a day. So I'm thinking whether to stop my hour what I'm doing at the evening, or shall I use some other strategy? If you can give me some valuable advice, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. I think you better use walking meditation instead of sitting, because most of the time if you are too tired and going for a sitting, easily because of the tiredness we go to a sleepy or a sleepy or drowsy state, and mind go and sort of hide there. So ultimately we lose consciousness and we lose the awareness, and the head bends. And we are in a kind of a sort of half conscious state. So this is not useful actually. So mind is in a kind of a dull state, and this is not useful. So instead of doing that, you can maybe go, if you have a garden, you can go to the garden, and if possible, you can sit there so that the breeze is available and there is a sort of activities are available. And or else you can do some very relaxed walking practice. And there are all the whatever the tensions happen during the day's work can be released, and your mind become fairly settled, and you are able to maintain awareness, maintain mindfulness. So that is more important than being in a very dull, drowsy kind of a state.
Yeah, thank you, Bhante. But I really like to extend my sitting time. I don't know why I really like it. So it's also kind of a craving in this case, because I do walking, and I have to walk like in the daytime when I have to do some work, and
yeah.
Then I have to walk from one distance to the other. Then I keep always concentrating on my foot or muscles or things like that,
yeah.
Like the way that you're instructing us. So I really want to do a bit more sitting. I have that kind of liking for it.
Yeah. The thing is,
can I get a minute to tell something as well? Today I actually experienced and I felt like little good about myself.
Yeah, yeah.
So today I had in the morning I did my usual meditation and then sitting session, and then actually I was blamed by one of the people very badly for one of the kind of a mistake that I have done. It's not a quite a mistake, but I won't define it as a mistake, but the person looks at it as a mistake, so I got a really bad blame. And it was so severe that I, you know, hearing all these bad words, you know, scolding and, you know, telling that you did it and things like that. So I was thinking, oh my God, now I think of the Swami saying that when you get into uncomfortable state that you have a, yeah, now you have a place to, you know, go, especially it's like a fire, then you have a place to go and, you know, stay safe. So I quickly got that instantly to my mind, and then I thought, okay, what shall I get on to? Then I was thinking about the sounds, because that was the severe thing that having in my ears. I was looking at the sounds, and but the other person, because I was not responding, I think he got so angry, and it's no doubled. And then started scolding about, because they know that I do a bit of mindful practice. And then started scolding about that, saying, oh, you're in a path now, and do you think that it would be good for you to stay on the path and doing all these mistakes and just teaching other things? So it doubled. And then I thought, oh my God, I think I should run now from this place, because, I mean, otherwise, I don't know. I mean, if I lose my patience, probably I will say something and then I will repent on it, thinking, oh, why I said that, because, you know, all this we hear from meditation guidance that you have to, you know, think twice when in a difficult situation. So anyway, but I couldn't hold, but then I said a few things to, you know, saying that, yes, it's my mistake, probably I will do the same thing again next month, because it's a monthly thing. And I said like that. And then I actually moved away. I just walked away because I didn't want to, you know, hear all those things. And then I came back and sat again, and I sat started again. So it's okay. But I thought then afterwards it settled. So the person said things, and no, I didn't keep listening. So therefore, my mind was so good. And then I was looking at the whole thing again, because as usual, the mind revisits the situation. And then I was thinking, oh my God, it's really good that the way that I handle it, because if it wasn't that my practice, I would have actually used some words, which becomes very unpleasant for both parties, and then had to repent the whole day. So after that, then I thought like that, and then started, keep on going with my work, and I was so relaxed, and then I thought I must take a lunch break and, you know, go for a walk. Which I did, and then I questioned from myself, am I happy today? Because all this incident happened in the morning, am I happy today? And can I have the same relationship with that person? Can I face him in the same usual way when I see him for work next time? And then I was saying, yeah, I don't have any grudge, because it's good. I can face. Yeah. I didn't say to him anything. He said, I don't know what he said, because I can't remember what he said. And then I realized my mistake. Yes, this is my mistake. I shouldn't do it next time. And then I was thinking to myself, it's okay to do mistakes. And there's all this space. And I was so happy and glad. And I felt like really I have some tools to face situations in these cases, especially with work, even working with the people who are not in practicing this kind of path. They blame the others that who practice, say that because you're practicing, the blame, most blame was your own path, and that's why you're forgetting. That's the point that they actually taken to, you know, like hit me. Mm-hmm. Are you forgetting things? You don't do things because you're on a path and you're forgetting things. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, no, I'm not forgetting because of I'm in path, because it's my mistake. Mm-hmm. It's my mistake. I know that. I understand it. And yeah, so I actually then think about you and Google Swami Mahasaya and everyone in this excellent one. I'd like to transfer merits. That was really a good experience, I felt like. And I'm so happy and glad that I touched this at this age. Thank you so much, yeah. Bhante.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, so these difficult situations are the one really allowing us to assess ourselves. So otherwise, I mean, we never improve ourselves. So the difficult situations, challenges are there for us to learn. So therefore,
I mean, it does not mean that we are going and asking for trouble, but rather when things are coming on our way, we have to learn how to tackle them, we have to learn how to handle them, and through which we are strengthening our inner way, our wisdom, and we are sort of testing our skills and refining our skills. And therefore, I mean, as you have correctly mentioned, so if we are able to recall our practice, and then we are handling the situations in a different manner. Previously, probably we may have handled impulsively and get into arguments and all these things. But now we are trying to handle things in a different manner. So that indicates some sort of a cultivation in ourselves. So the practice what we are developing is not simply in the surface level, but it has now deeply rooted in ourselves. So that is a good sign. So likewise, we have to sort of in a humble manner, we have to recognize where we are, what are the defilements still sort of arising in myself, and rather than justify them, honestly understanding that still there is space to develop, further I have to develop myself. So likewise, having that kind of a more realistic approach is much better, and that is the only way that we can slowly overcome various defilements. Okay, I think we have reached the time. So we have spent 1.5 hours today, and with me, Venerable Dhammo Basa also joined today, and there are many others also joined remotely. So this way we are able to accumulate a lot of merits. Let's share the merits with reciting traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiyā. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiyā. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiyā. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiraṁ rakkhantu sāsanaṁ. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiraṁ rakkhantu desanaṁ. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiraṁ rakkhantu mamparaṁ. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.